Tommy Lorenzo.
And this is the Pop Style Opinion Fest. Hello, kittens. Welcome back to another edition of the PSO. I am the T in your T-Lo, Tom Fitzgerald, and I'm here with the Low in your T-Lo, Lorenzo Marquez, my lovely husband.
Hello.
How are you doing, Lorenzo?
Good.
It is a very hectic Friday around these parts. We just had a lot of content to push out on the last day of the week, and we were badly prepared bitches for all of it. So we've been running around like chickens with our heads cut off. We went to bed last night without watching the episode of Drag Race Holland that we were meant to recap today, which we did, but we had to get up early this morning and watch it. And we had a plan to watch a certain movie last night and make that the focus of this week's podcast. And we didn't because we were lazy ass bitches. And then we realized, you know what? I really want to talk about that movie. So we sat down today in the middle of our workday to watch the controversial Netflix film Cuties, French title Mignon. And we're going to talk about that in a bit, the controversy that surrounded that. But let's put that off for a minute or two before we dive into the scary waters of controversy. Real quick, Drag Race Holland.
Oh my God.
Right?
It's funny.
Sometimes, like, these shows start and you just get a sense and you're like, and it was same with Drag Race UK. When those queens walked out, I was like, all right, I think this is going to be a good season. And it was.
Right.
And
it's funny because we get tired of it and then a new one comes out. And we're like, oh my God,
they're
it's
all
so fresh
faced and excited.
Fresh and exciting.
No, we have a review on the site today for Drag Race Holland. But I just wanted to say we were both so caught off guard by how much fun that episode was.
Right. I think the thing about these different versions, especially I don't know, the ones that do not, I like not from an English speaking country. I find them fascinating because they're so much, you know, it's a different culture. They bring something new and different. I mean, Canada is a different country. I mean, I know that, and it is a different culture, but it's English. And it felt to me in a way that the Canadian version was trying very hard to do the American version, you know.
I just think the Canadian version had a lot of casting problems, both in its judging panel and in the queens that they cast. But Drag Race UK, and last night, or today when we finally watched it, Drag Race Holland's first episode, I was blown away by all the girls and completely happy with the judges.
And let me just talk about, I just mentioned English-speaking countries. Yeah, the UK version, they also speak English, of course. But I feel that you can tell in the beginning that RuPaul and the whole production is trying very much to do the same version. But the queens didn't let that happen.
In UK.
The UK version, because they're so strong. They had so much personality. And they were so eager to present a UK version of drag that they just didn't let that happen. And they took over. So you can see that happening. Same thing with the Holland version. I loved it. The queens are so funny.
I don't think they're trying to be the American version of the show. Although it's exactly the same show, of course.
Right.
But I like the lead judge and the host, Fred, whose last name I cannot remember. He's a lot of fun. He's high energy. He also does some pretty killer drag. He walked out looking pretty fantastic on the main stage. And it really brought home to me how much someone like Brooklyn Heights was just lacking for Canada's Drag
Which
Race. She just didn't have that energy.
Right.
You know, you're the host. You've really got to be responsible for the energy.
So he's in drag. I don't understand why the Canadian version didn't have that. I don't understand why the Canadian version decided to do a whole different panel.
They had a drag queen. They had Brooklyn.
But Brooklyn wasn't like the host or whatever. Everyone took turns.
Yeah, I hated that. They should just name a host.
Right. The Canadian version, everyone was doing everything.
Well, that's
which was a little confusing.
I think they didn't name Brooklyn a host because he's not good at hosting. Like they
I guess.
Could tell
yeah, yeah,
that
yeah.
he couldn't carry a whole show. I feel like I'm always ragging on Brooklyn. And I like Brooklyn as a queen. I do think that sometimes she's elevated a bit more than her resume warrants.
I agree.
Let's put it that way. I do think she's a good queen. Don't quite understand why she's the host of her own drag race show. Just because, I mean, because she's Canadian.
She's Canadian, yeah.
Feel like she's not there yet. She doesn't have that level of energy. Anyway, Drag Race Holland was a pleasant surprise. We have a recap up today on our site. And really well cast. not a diverse cast.
Right.
Although I'm not here to assess the, you know, demographics of the Netherlands. I'm not sure how diverse it was supposed to be.
They do have someone from Brazil. One person from Brazil.
But there are no Asian or black queens.
No, I didn't know.
And I mean, that is notable. But the queens are very polished, very professional. I think that's something that the Canada's Drag Race crop sort of lacked. And surprisingly cute out of drag. A lot of them are surprisingly cute. So, yeah, we're back in it again. You think, oh, you know, I mean, we have been recapping RuPaul's Drag Race since the very first episode in February of 2009. Then we wrote a whole ass damn book about it. And you'd think we'd be really tired. I'll say this. I find it an effort to write about Project Runway after all this time.
Right.
But I don't really find it all that hard to write about Drag Race.
I think the difference is that no matter what, the queens are different. And they are bringing something different.
It's true.
Even if it's the same show, the same format, the queens are different. So
you can only watch so many plain, ugly wrap dresses walk a Project Runway.
So I think that's the difference.
I do, too.
And when you add the element of doing it in a different country, then you bring all the different, you know, aspects of a different culture, the way you do drag, the way you gay in a different country, in a way.
Right. That's all. Moving on, I just want to make you all really jealous because we got screeners for season four of The Crown last night, and I tore through the first three episodes. Can't really say anything yet. Everything is embargoed. I will say that Emma Corrin is going to blow everybody away as Princess Diana. And she is going to blow everyone away. There are times where my breath caught.
You can't.
I'm not giving anything away, but I'm just saying where I was. It felt like you were looking at Diana. It really. There are several moments where it really feels like you're looking at 19-year-old Diana Spencer. Not just because she looks like her, but because she really embodies her. She does a great job. That's literally all I'm going to say. Will not give you another hint on another thing.
You can't.
But yeah, we'll be. We'll be talking about that when the time comes, but that's actually a couple months away.
Yeah,
but what else? What are the screeners?
I've been watching a lot of shows lately. I've been watching on HBO. I've been watching The Vow, which is a great show. Infuriating. It's based on the real story of this cult. You know, making women slaves and all that. It's hard to watch based on a real story. Sometimes I feel like I have to watch these things because you need to know what's out there. You need to know what's going on. You need to be aware of certain things happening in the world. And that's why sometimes I watch these things. It is a great show. I'm also watching, it's a screener. It's not available yet. The Vow is available on HBO. I'm also watching the screeners of The Queen's Gambit, which is a new show on Netflix.
One with Anya Taylor-Joy about the chess player.
Yes, and she is, I can't say anything about it, but she's always amazing. I think
I love her as an actress.
She has such a face. She's such a great actress.
Right.
She did some great stuff before, and now she's the main actress, the lead actress in this new show. And it's an interesting show. It's about, I mean, it's out there. They already announced it's she plays an orphan. She's kind of like a chess prodigy. And then she
prodigy.
I'm sorry. And she is, she competes. She goes around the world and competes but she also has a addiction problem. So, and it's based on a book. It's based on a novel by the same name. So, I'm enjoying it. I can't.
But it's
say
also
anything.
Embargoed. We
yes,
can't really
I can't say anything about it. The other show I'm watching on HBO is called We Are Who We Are, which is they only released one episode so far. But I love it. It's a subject matter that interests me a lot, which is America's on military bases abroad, overseas especially. So this one in particular is a bunch of families in Italy in a military base, and it's all about the teenagers like growing up and having to, you know, deal with that kind of situation where you are in a different country. You're pretty much living an American life, but you're also in a different country. And then when you kind of like settle and learn a little bit about the country, the culture, you have to move on to another country. So I find it fascinating,
right?
Type of life, challenging experience. And it's an interesting show. I've watched, you know me, when I get obsessed with a show, I've watched the first episode like 5 times already. I love it. I love the direction. I love the soundtrack. I love the actors. Chloe Sevigny.
Always love Chloe Sevigny.
Chloe Sevigny plays the mother. It's interesting. She has a child and he's, you know, discovering the world. And I like the show a lot. Anyway, I recommend it. And one episode's already out. I think the second one will drop soon. But that's it. That's what pretty much I've been
watching.
All right,
before we move on to Mignons or Cuties, Ryan Murphy.
Yes.
We have been having some rather heated discussions about Ryan Murphy this week. Not that we're in any form of disagreement with each other, but we kind of get all head up when we start talking about this dude. We've batted him around before on this site, on this podcast. And, I will say that a lot of our critique of him will often come down to, I don't know how else to put this, recognizing certain impulses in him. He's pretty much the same age as us, roughly the same age. He's a white gay man who was roughly the same age as us, who, has a lot of the obsessions that, typical, stereotypical gay male obsessions. And, you know, I'm certainly not going to criticize him for that. We're fucking fashion bloggers, for Christ's sake. I mean, we wrote about movie musicals and like we have similar obsessions and we've made a career out of our very gay obsessions. So I think some of our problem with him comes down to that. And what's spawned this discussion, of course, was Ratched came out this week. And we're going to bat that around a little bit. Not too much, because we've got a full review of Ratched on our site, plus a short review of the costumes. But we did want to, I just wanted to bring that
sort of
heated discussion in about...
Because finally, it's not just us feeling that way. I mean, there are
for the longest time, we did feel like we were out in the wilderness.
Right, but now people... got tired of it.
I mean, we dropped off American Horror Story years ago.
Right.
Scream Queens, we thought was stupid. Couldn't handle a minute of The Politician. I literally could not handle it.
I kind of liked Hollywood in the beginning, and then
fell
apart.
I hated Hollywood.
I liked the first three episodes.
Angry at Hollywood by the end of it. Feud, Betty and Joan, was a huge disappointment in the long run. He takes these obsessions, these sort of obsessions with Hollywood divas and gothic horror and in the case of Ratched, all these obsessions with like the films of Douglas Sirk and the films of Alfred Hitchcock and sort of mid-century lesbian. We've written about it. We've actually written about them in the book, lesbian pulp fiction novels that are, the movie Carol with Cate Blanchett. Was originally started out as a lesbian pulp fiction novel in the 1950s. And there's a lot of that in Ratched, because there's this, 1947 closeted lesbians in love, this clandestine love affair thing going on with Sarah Paulson and Cynthia Nixon. So it's like these very middle-aged gay male obsessions, classic Hollywood, bitchy divas, campy sort of mid-century gay lit and that sort of thing. And it's all in the mix with his work. And I, on the one hand, I'm like, good for you. You made a whole career out of the kind of obsessions your average Gen X middle-aged gay man has.
Right.
On the other hand, God, why do you do it so badly so often? I think he's a very talented television creator. I mean, you can't really take the creation of Glee away from him. That was, in the beginning, just... it was fire.
Really, it was,
you can't take away things like Pose, even though he handed Pose off to other people. And the reason the show is as good as it is because Ryan Murphy really isn't in charge of it. But okay, you can talk about Pose. You can talk about the assassination of Gianni Versace, which I was okay with. Some people thought it was much better than I did. And the trial, the O.J. Simpson one, which won a lot of Emmys. Like, that's quality work on his part, and I appreciate it, and I appreciate what he does. But then, like, with Ratched, it was like, oh my God, I just felt like a middle-aged gay man playing with dolls in a dollhouse. Right, and the last few seasons of AHS were like that, where it's like, let's put Jessica Lange in a silly costume with a silly accent and make her say incredibly bitchy things in more and more ludicrous backgrounds and call that art.
I think he lacks the sophistication of, like, Wes Anderson, for example, like with the Grand Budapest Hotel.
Right.
He doesn't have that sophistication that you are going overboard. Everything is out of control and big and glamorous and you know.
Right.
But it's still, you're laughing with the audience.
Right.
You know, you understand that this is all for your eyes. And you understand that, but I don't think it's the same with Ryan Murphy. It's
very surface.
It's very, and everything is so cartoonish. Like the way they talk, the script is always horrible.
Right.
Everyone overacts the entire time. Everything is very, 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 I don't know, in your face.
Right. This kabuki that they
yes,
do.
Yes. Everything.
Gay
kabuki. I read a very funny interview about the show saying that, you know, I think it was a Newsweek review of the show said, oh my God, they even created like a soundtrack when you know.
Sophia Ganoto's character has multiple personality disorder. Yes. And there's just this terrible set of scenes where she is cycling through personalities one right after another.
And the music changes
the
every
music
time,
changes
every
with
time
each one. So there's like a sound effect for when her personality shift.
And they were like, what the fuck? They even created a soundtrack.
And the problem with Ratched, and this is a problem with a lot of Murphy's work, is that he doesn't fully commit to the campy side of it.
Right.
Like, he wants to do prestige television, but at the same time, he wants to indulge in, like, John Waters level camp.
Right.
And he tries to marry the two, and it doesn't work.
And at the
same
time,
it's not funny like John Waters, and it's not prestige like high quality television. It's this weird mix of the two.
And he tries to pack too much, I think. And he also wants to teach you or to, you know, talk about certain issues in the past with homosexuality, with
he's
gay
obsessed
rights
with mid-century homosexuality, yeah, lavender marriages.
Which is all great, but it's inserted in such a grotesque way sometimes that you're just like, really? Do we really need
and
to?
And it doesn't, and I'm yeah. saying this, I wrote a queer history book. I don't think that stuff needs to be inserted into every single story.
Right.
And I don't mean like, I don't mean gay people. I mean the tragic lives of gay people, you know, gay people being chemically castrated and gay people in mental institutions and gay people in loveless marriages. Like, that's his obsession with gay people of yore. And I understand it. I feel like you need to be truthful about that, but you also can't paint this picture that everybody pre-Stonewall, every queer person pre-Stonewall was living just this absolute life of misery and horror. I mean, that's doing a disservice to our forebears if you focus too much on that stuff. I was going somewhere with this, but the thing with Murphy is, I guess what's so frustrating is that he does touch on these things that I do find interesting on the surface, and then he fucks it up somehow. All this stuff came out now that Ratched is out, and thank God the reviews are terrible. I hate to say that, but for weeks, he and I were like, this series is awful, and if the critics say they love it, I'm going
to
freak the hell. I remember when Hollywood came out, and I was like, why isn't everyone trashing this horror?
Right.
It got mixed reviews. Not everybody raved about it. And it was the same thing with The Politician, where I was like, why is everyone acting like this is cheeky and funny when it's actually horrible?
I think the subject matter people had some interesting takes. You know, The Politician, because it was about politics. And the Hollywood had a lot to do with race and gender.
But
and
it was
all
still
that
bad.
Stuff. Right. But I think people, we were like, all right, we're going to run with this and have some interesting conversation about it. But in this case, there's not, yeah, what are you going to talk about?
Right.
Like, it's just a crazy
and
hospital.
So the reviews came out, and now there's articles being written about the show. And one that I read, and I think this morning, it might have been yesterday, was how it got developed. It was a film student, this guy, Evan Romaneski, who's the executive producer of the show. He's like 30 years old, and he sold the script when he was like 25 out of film school. And it was largely undeveloped. It wound up in Murphy's hands, and he was the one who convinced this guy to turn it into a TV series with four seasons. He's got four planned seasons of this.
I think series. I heard that it's, yeah, yeah, oh my God.
I don't want to give anything away, but the ending of the first season is so ridiculous, I can't imagine anyone would want to watch further, but hey, I could be wrong. But it was one of the things that came out in like, all of the seriously ridiculous stuff in the script, it turns out it was Murphy's idea. He insisted on the monkey on Sharon Stone's shoulder. It was never in the script. Sharon Stone fought him on it. She didn't want it. She thought it was stupid. And he was like, you're doing it. You're doing the monkey. There's no point to the monkey. There's no point to it. And this is so why I get so annoyed. One of the reasons. It just made for great press and great social media. He knew that if he put Sharon Stone in 1940s clothes and put a monkey on her shoulder, he knew it would be all over Twitter and Instagram. It would be all anybody would talk about was Sharon Stone with a monkey on her shoulder. And that's the part of his work that really annoys me. There's no reason for the monkey. It adds nothing. He put it in there so that you guys would talk about it. That's it.
In terms of costumes, you can argue that, you know, costumes can be used to emphasize things, to blow up things, and to make things, you know, bigger than the actual characters, but you have to strike a balance. There is no balance here. Yes, the characters are over the top. The sets are over the top. Everything is over the top.
But that entire approach is so dumb for Nurse Ratched. It's so dumb.
So that's what I mean by you have to have some sort of balance here. You can emphasize certain things, but at the same time, you have to tone down others so that everything works. And it doesn't here. Like, I remember watching the first episode. And I was like, what? This is where the hotel is? Are you kidding me?
Right. The whole thing is so over stylized that it's oppressively stylized. Right. You can't get past how stylized everything is. And we brought up Hitchcock and Douglas Sirk, and everybody else has been bringing it up in their reviews because the influences are so heavy and so obvious. But he misses the point of Douglas Sirk and Alfred Hitchcock, which was they knew how to use stylization and heightened reality, but they didn't let it overwhelm the story.
Exactly.
They kept it under control in service to the story. And he doesn't do that. He loses the plot literally and just drowns the viewer in art direction and costume design and camera tricks.
Right. And it's just not enough. Even if you're a fan of that type of thing, even if you're a hardcore fan of camp, that's not enough.
Yeah. There's really nothing about Ratched that is campy. I think he thought he was making something campy and it never got there because it's so self-serious and it's layered with so many plots and agendas that it's humorless. There's nothing about it. I didn't crack a smile once in the 8 hours.
No, and I'm not a horror movie person or TV show person. I don't like the genre at all, unless it's done in a way that it's different and a little more clever. But in general, I don't like it. So to me, certain parts, I was like, I can't watch this. I mean, there's nothing else aside from this. Sometimes I stick to a movie or a TV series and, you know, watch something horrible because there's more to it than just that.
Right. But like Lovecraft Country.
Right. Then I'll, you
Which is slowly circling the drain, I have to admit.
Yeah. Anyway, so I'll put up with certain things because, you know, the grand prize is much better. But otherwise, I'm like, no, why?
Right.
Why am I watching this?
So if you want to hear more about this, you by all means, read our review. It's about 1,500 words, pretty much trashing Ratched. We batted back and forth about how harsh we were going to be on this because, believe it or not, we've been in this game long enough. We publish two books. We try and maintain an air of professionalism. You don't want to be that like bitchy blogger who just writes whatever he wants. Uh-huh. And you want to write like a professional. But I was so we were going back and forth with this piece, this review, and I was like, no, I really feel like we need to just be honest and just trash this show because it's bad. It's bad television. It is a waste of the actresses. I literally cringed for Cynthia Nixon in several scenes.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Not because she was doing a bad job, but because I felt this was so beneath her. Same thing with Sharon Stone, although as you put it so well last night, even though it's such a broad thing, you said, I don't think she's some sort of great actress, but Sharon Stone can do things. And right. I was like, oh my God, that is so well put.
Yeah, I mean, think
she knows what
Casino.
To do on camera. She can command a camera. She can command a scene. And she knows what to do with material. I wouldn't rate her as Meryl Streep, but she is way far above this material.
She has presence. I mean, you cannot.
And charisma, yeah.
Right, right. And it's not there.
No, she's a total waste in this whole show. Complete waste. I don't even understand the point of that character. Total waste of your time. Anyway, if you want to watch it, go right ahead.
No, I mean, if you want to watch it, like some people say, just because you're going to hate it.
Just because you like the costumes.
Or because you like the costumes.
We would never tell someone not to do it, but we walked away from this one angry. And we feel like, except for Pose, which, as I said, he handed off to other people like Janet Mock. He hasn't really produced anything of value, in quite some time. His work has gotten increasingly trashy, increasingly sloppy. And he seems to fall back on the same tired, gay-ass themes over and over again.
I think so.
I'm looking forward to The Boys in the Band, but as we both said, he's not going to fuck with that material.
He can't fuck this up, yeah.
And he that cast came handed to him from Broadway, so I'm hoping he didn't screw that one up. But I haven't seen anything from Murphy in many, many years that has really impressed me, except Propose.
I'm interesting. I haven't read anything about his reaction to the negative reviews, because I remember reading all the stuff after Hollywood was released. He was annoyed with critics in general for criticizing Hollywood. I think he even said, you know, it's not for the critics. You know, the show is.
Oh, that's
the critics.
What they say when they make a piece of trash.
Some stuff like that. So I'm curious, but they are promoting the hell out of it. I see a lot of ads and a lot of stuff.
I really
going
feel
on.
Bad yeah. for Sarah Paulson, but not that bad because she knew what she was getting into with him. But it's not. It's a real star turn on her part, or at least they try and make it one. But and she's. I can't say she did a bad job, but she wasn't given anything. She did as good a job as she could do, but considering how much focus is put on her and how they've really pushed her for this, I'm like, yeah, I don't really see this as an Emmy winning portrayal for her. I really don't.
The way I feel about his shows in general is I just hate the way people talk. They talk like they're reading a script. They don't sound natural. Everything is very emphasized, and there's always like a punchline or something, emphasis somewhere.
Right.
And people don't talk like that. No. So I hate that. And even if you're a great actor, you're like, what are you doing? This just doesn't work.
Yeah.
It's pretty to look at. I mean, it's visually it's stunning.
It's just frustrating because to see a director with basically at this point, a show creator, a showrunner.
All that money.
With unlimited power, and his obsessions are similar to my own. And so many of his obsessions just check off my buttons.
Right.
Because we're both middle-aged white gay men. And then he screws it up every time. It's just so disappointing. Like, how do you screw up a whole series about Betty Davis and Joan Crawford and you made something really boring? Whatever. I think that's enough trashing. Mm-hmm. Now let's trash cuties.
Yes.
Oh, God. Oh Tab God. Is
There's
going
a cat
to.
Right
Tab
here.
Hunter is.
Ready
if
for
you
action.
Hear a loud crash in the next few minutes, it's him. And we're fine.
He's huge. Anyway.
We just have a giant 400-pound
cat. Oh, my God. He is
who
the biggest cat. Anyway.
Likes to jump around. Okay. So, Cuties, directed by, it's a French film directed by a French woman of Senegalese descent named Maimouna Doucouré. It came out, it hit the festivals last year, and it got really good reviews. It was critically well reviewed. And eventually got picked up by Netflix, and I don't even know why I'm excited. Again, I explain these things to an audience that I am 99% sure knows all
right.
of this because it was an enormous, enormous scandal for the last couple of weeks when Netflix released the artwork
picture.
For it,
yeah.
The promotional poster for it. It was different from the French poster, and it emphasized the final scene of the film, which is a bunch of 11-year-old girls basically twerking in dance costumes. hugely controversial film when American mainstream audiences found out about it. If this was playing art houses across America in cities and stuff like that, there would be no issue.
No.
But people are seeing this on their TV screens when they boot up Netflix. And let's talk about the film. We sat and watched it, and I will say first that if you had a problem with the scenes that you saw, because they were all over social media and everything, of the girls dancing, and if you felt that was problematic, I won't argue with you on that. I would not sit here and say you're wrong to think that. Those scenes are hard to watch.
Right.
And the director will counter that those scenes are necessary to bolster the themes of the film, which the film is a harsh and somewhat depressing look at childhood in the modern era, and how, in this case, how young girls, and we're talking 11-year-old girls, are sexualized too early because of their exposure to certain things. And that is what the story is about. It is a critique of all the forces that turn these girls into these little twerking things at 11. But, and she would argue as a director, and she did argue this several times in defending the film, right, that it was necessary for her to show these scenes of these girls dancing. I will say that almost none of the dance, some of the dancing crosses the line, but most of the dancing is the kind of stuff you would see on Dance Moms. Some of it does cross the line, and it gets into like Beyonce and Nicki Minaj style dancing.
Right.
Where it is, well, not Beyonce, more like Nicki Minaj, Cardi B, where it is explicit in how it's not pornographic, but everybody's dressed. Let's just get that. If you haven't seen it yet, there is no pornographic aspect to this film. No one is naked. But the girls dance the way you would see a Nicki Minaj or Cardi, or, you know, wet ass pussy. They dancing like that, except they're 11 years old. And the director shot the whole thing. And that is very hard to sit through. It is very fucking uncomfortable. And if you are a parent or whomever and you saw that and you were outraged, I'm not here to tell you not to be outraged. It is right. Hard to look at. And I don't think it's wrong to ask questions of how was this shot? Because fine, you're critiquing something societally, but you're still using the bodies of 11-year-old girls to depict it. Those are real girls. You actually twerked. You asked them to twerk on camera.
Right,
you
to do those things, yes.
A camera right on their ass or right on their crotch while they did it. They could not. And part of me, I'd heard about these scenes and I was like, well, I went to film school. I can read a focal length when I'm watching a scene. I can tell if a camera's close or not. I'm like, yeah, these. And then I watched the scene and I was like, no, this was not shot from across the room. She had the camera right up. Again, nothing about this is pornographic. Nothing about this is X-rated. It's just shocking. But as I said to Lorenzo, I was like, I'm not shocked by the idea here. I'm just shocked to see it depicted in a film. I'm not shocked that 11-year-old girls would dance like that. Why wouldn't they dance like that? They see Cardi B dance like that. They see Nicki Minaj dance like that. Like, they're just not dancing like that in front of their parents most of the time, and most directors aren't using a camera to capture it. But the idea that 11-year-old girls are dancing in a sexualized manner, I mean, I live in the world. I don't find that remotely shocking. Anyway, right. I'm doing
talking. No, I agree. I think there's so much to talk about. First of all, the fact that Netflix is bringing all these new international movies and series to an audience that it's not used to that type of exposure.
Yeah.
So that's number one. Not defending here. I'm just stating a fact that most people have Netflix, and a lot of people are not that much into international movies. And so when they see,
let alone international movies that are difficult to watch, that right. force you to question certain things about society and what you right. allow as a member. You know, it's a hard film, and it is. In many ways, a very sad film. Not just because it's 11-year-old girls twerking. It's an excellent film, I should say, because it really depicts the pain of childhood, the pain of finding things out about the world and not good things. And the lead actress in it is absolutely excellent. A lot is asked of her, the little girl who's in it, and she's very, very good at depicting. I don't know how else to put this, the loneliness and confusion that you feel at that age, like just before you hit your teenage years, when you start figuring out that the world is fucked up, that you're, maybe your parents aren't who you thought they were. There's a scene where she watches her mother cry, and the way it's shot is just brilliant. I don't want to give it away because the way it's shot is so well done. But that scene is so poignant because that is a heartbreaking moment for children to see their parents weak, to see their parents broken, to see their parents reacting to the badness of the world. And so, I mean, the film has so much to offer on that level. It's so good about telling coming, it's a classic coming of age story. It's examines themes of, what are you looking at?
No, Bula? Just
examines themes of immigration. The little girl at the center of the story is Senegalese. Her mother and her father, who we never see, are immigrants from Senegal. And her grandmother or her auntie is also in the household. And so it's, and they're Muslim. So there's all these scenes of the women. She's being raised by women. Her father isn't around. And the lessons she's being told, the rather traditional lessons of womanhood that are being drilled into her by these women. And there's this great tension in the film, but it's also, I mean, there's that tension between traditionalism, the immigrant experience of coming to the West and trying to raise children in a world, in a culture that's so different from your own. But at the same time, it's drawing connections between those two worlds and how confusing that is for a child. She's on social media watching other kids twerk and you know, take pictures of their crotches or whatever. And it's obviously sexualizing her too early. But at the same time, the women in her family, when she has her first period, it's more like, it's like, well, okay, here now, here's your servitude. You're a woman now. Here's all the things you have to do and put up with. And she's 11. So it's coming at her from both directions. It's coming from a traditional Muslim direction and a Western media direction. And both are saying the same thing. They're trying to turn a little girl into a grown woman way before she can handle it. So I really liked the film, and it will stick with me for a really, really, really long time. But I have to admit, having seen it, I'm a little bit softer towards the people who are screaming about it. I don't agree with them. It isn't child pornography. It does not need to be investigated because frickin' Ted Cruz and Senator Tom Cotton, one of them, threatened to, they were going to have an investigation. They were going to investigate the film and bring up Netflix on charges of child pornography. And of course, this all became an electoral issue because it's Netflix. It's on Netflix, and Netflix has the Obamas on it. So suddenly that is it represents all of left-wing Democratic politics to a certain segment of the audience. And they feel that this film, which has nothing to do with American politics whatsoever, can be used as a weapon in the electoral wars. So, yes, there are Republicans screaming about it as a way to attack Democrats, but it has nothing to do with Democrats. And it, honestly, it has nothing to do with American culture. And this, I think, is part of the outrage here, is that it's a film that doesn't belong on Netflix. It really doesn't. I think Netflix can and should have foreign films. I think Netflix should have difficult films, but I don't think this was the correct venue for it.
Yeah, I think, as I said, Netflix is bringing all these incredible movies, but at the same time, some movies are very difficult to watch. And if you're not a fan of international movies, or if you're not familiar with that type of movies, that it's out there in Europe everywhere, being presented in the festivals and so on, then it's tough to watch. I mean, it did remind me of another Belgian movie made back in 1973 called Ma Vie en Rose, about a little boy who keeps telling everyone.
Oh, that's such a good movie.
Who keeps telling everyone in his family that he's a girl and he wants to be a girl and acts like a girl. And it's such a hard movie to watch.
Yeah.
Because the family is fighting with this kid, and this kid cannot understand why people don't accept that he's a girl. It's a very problematic movie to watch and hard to watch. And it is a kid. you know, playing that right. part. That's what I'm trying to say. So it is hard to watch these movies because you are seeing actors
who are young,
who are very, very young, playing these parts. So yeah, you question that and you're like, oh my God. So there, I think it's conflicting because it's your opinion about the subject matter. You're horrified about the subject matter, but at the same time, it's an art form. So when do you stop right. one or the other?
Right.
Or when do you embrace both? So it's tough. It's very tough. But it's not just about that. It's also about immigration, as you mentioned. Netflix has presented incredible movies about the subject matter of that, of families moving to a West, a country in the West, and having to deal with the two cultures, having to, you know, be part of the new culture, the new country, but at the same time, you know, keep your traditions, and then you have kids. And then you have to deal with the fact that these kids might not embrace your culture
right.
or be conflicted about it, which is the case here. You can clearly see that the girl is mesmerized, fascinated by the world that she sees.
Right.
But at the same time, she's being groomed, you know, she's being educated in a way or raised in a way that it's not exactly what she sees at school and right. so on. And I think the movie, and I think the director said that too, it looks at the importance and the danger of social media, internet, and all that.
Right.
I remember having conversation with family members, like parents having to deal with kids going to YouTube and watching a movie, and that movie leading to another movie and another horrible movie. And then, you know, all of a sudden you're watching something that has nothing to do with the first movie
right.
or video. Right. And they're horrified by it, that the kids had access to that. So it is a complicated world, you know, that in a way needs controlling. But to say that kids their age are not exposed to that when they have a phone,
right.
it's naive.
It's totally naive.
It's very naive to think that way. I mean, kids are exposed to it. I'm not saying it's correct that they are. I'm not saying that, you know.
But it's the world that we live in.
But it is. And I think the movie is making that point. The,
right.
the movie is not... it's hard to... The movie is not saying that that's right, in a way. The movie is just...
Not at all. It's serving as a critique.
It's quite the opposite.
And one
exactly.
of the things that I want to make clear, and I think this was very sensitive and adept filmmaking on her part, the director, Maimouna Doucouré, is the scenes where the girl, especially the lead actress, is really, really going for it in these dance routines. You can tell that these girls have literally no idea what they're doing.
Right.
They don't understand.
Right.
There's a very good scene where they find a condom in a park. And it's very clear, by the way, these girls don't know the first thing about the mechanics of sex. And they're actually not even particularly interested in it. They're not old enough yet. They're still pre-sexual. So when they are doing these these twerking routines, you can see it on the actors' faces. They don't understand that what they're doing is sexual.
Or
they don't understand the implications of it. They are simply moving their bodies the way they see dancers move their bodies.
I think the movie does a good job presenting that the fact that these girls are still girls.
Yes, girls.
Little girls without any knowledge of a lot of things, but yeah. at the same time exposed to a lot of things.
Right.
And
right.
it's conflicting because right. they don't have the mechanisms that an adult or supposed to have. You know, they're still a kid. They're kids, but they're exposed to all this sexualized, world and entertainment, and they want to replicate that because they think that's the cool way to do, the cool way to be.
I'm just gonna say that the only part of the film that I could object to, that I could understand the objections to, were how these girls were shot. Because they are real girls and they had to be asked to do certain things on camera. I understood why the director felt that she had, there's no point in telling the story if you can't show what it is you're critiquing.
Right.
So, and I remember sitting there watching, especially the scene where her aunt and her mother are, I guess, blessing her with holy water because they think she's got the devil in her. And she does this whole like sensual twerking dance in front of them. I remember watching it and going, well, if this was an American, maybe they would have cast like a 16-year-old who looked like an 11-year-old. And then I was like, but how is that better? How is that? Would that have made it better?
Right.
Would that have made this scene easier to watch? So I appreciate the truthfulness of what she was doing. And I do want to read something she said. She said that she created a climate of trust between the children and myself. She said, I explained to them everything I was doing and the research that I had done before I wrote this story. I was also lucky that these girls' parents were also activists, so we were all on the same side. At their age, they've seen this kind of dance. Any child with a telephone can find these images on social media these days. And she also stated that she worked with a child psychologist during filming. So I feel that she, I don't feel that she was irresponsible. It sounds like she was responsible right. with these girls. And I'm not objecting to the film. I guess I'm trying to say that if you found those images objectionable, I'm not here to tell you that you're wrong. They are meant to be. And as a viewer, it's a matter of answering the question of whether you want to sit through something like that
exactly.
or not.
Exactly. I think you can make the point that we don't need these things being turned into an art form. That you know,
those, or maybe we don't need them on Netflix.
Yeah, you can
go
make,
to go
can
out to a
the
theater.
Point,
yeah,
you can make the point that these issues are way too hard on their own, and that you don't need to see them in an entertainment form,
right.
So to speak. But at the same time, if you don't, as I guess as an artist, as someone creating something. If you don't bring these issues up, that then they're not talked about. They're not discussed.
Exactly. I mean, art has to do that.
Right. Art does that. Make you talk about things.
Right.
Discuss
Show
things.
You the world that you live in.
Right. And question things.
Right.
And compare things and you know, have a conversation about it. How to change it. So, you know, there's that too.
The film has value. The film, I would actually, on its own merits, call it an excellent, excellent film. It is going to stick with me for a while. It is one of the most poignant examinations of that period between childhood and adulthood. The confusion and the loneliness and the frustration. What I loved is that this girl, the story never leaves the main character, Amy. She is in every scene. She does things that are just not right. And I don't mean not right in a sexual way. I mean, she does mean things. She does nasty things. The girl that she pushes in the river and everything like that. Like, she steals. And she does stuff that, you know, it's not great. But it's also unflinching in its portrayal of how kids will be, how desperate kids will be for, and the things that they will do for
attention.
For what?
Attention.
For attention, for popularity.
Right.
To become what they think, the kind of what adulthood is supposed to be, that right. rush to adulthood. So it depicts all of that so, so well. But the fact of the matter is, to watch an unflinching portrayal of that subject matter is to watch stuff that's hard to watch.
It is.
If it's done well, it's going to be hard to watch.
Some parts are funny. You laugh.
Yeah.
But other parts
it's painful
are
to watch.
Very, very uncomfortable.
Yeah, and I don't just mean the sexual twerking stuff.
No.
It's just hard. Navigating that world. She gets her first period. She finds a rubber in the park. She's got weird feelings for boys, but she doesn't know what that means. You know what I mean? She's never seen a penis before. All this stuff is in it, and it's explored in certain ways. Like the girls looking at porn on their phones, and the way that they... It's funny. They don't show the porn, but... what they say about what they're seeing indicates they have no idea. They just don't understand the mechanics of sex. They don't understand any of it. Even though they're looking at it, they still don't understand.
Right. Like I said, it's an interesting thing these days that, you know, kids are exposed to so much, but at the same time, they're not prepared to.
They're not trained for
they're
it.
They're not trained. They're not prepared for that,
exactly.
For that type of exposure. And you know, this is what the movie is talking about.
Yeah, exactly. And it does a really good job of examining that stuff. So, we give the film basically a thumbs up to do an old Siskel and Ebert thing. I would give the film an A in terms, it's an excellent film, but, it's hard to watch. I don't think it probably should be on Netflix, but I also don't think it needs to be examined for any, it's not pornography.
No.
It doesn't even come close to any definition of it. There is literally no nudity or even... They're not even in, they're in dance costumes at the end of the film, but they're not all that, I mean, there's nothing like that. It's all 11-year-olds living in their bodies. It's just their bodies. You know what I mean? And that's the part that's hard to watch.
Right.
Anyway, I think we batted it around. Don't watch it if you can't handle that sort of thing. And by all means, if you fully object to it, I'm not here to argue with you on that.
Right.
When films depict things that are hard to watch, I can't yell at people who turn around and say, I can't watch that. Like, okay.
No, then. I agree. I mean, how many times I've seen something and I'm like, I'm not going to watch this. I just don't feel like going through this.
Right. Right.
And it's your option. I mean, it's your choice.
It's not, it is a depressing film. I was gonna say it's not a dark film, and it's not a dark film, but it is a sad film. It doesn't end on a sad note.
It is sad.
It ends on a fairly hopeful note, I think.
It's sad, but also very informative, I think.
And it's just, it's real. It just felt, and right. Neither one of us were ever little girls, so I can't speak to what it's like to be a little girl at that age, but it feels so correct. It feels so truthful mm-hmm. about that. Anyway, these are our thoughts on the most controversial film of the month and on Ryan Murphy. And do we have anything else we want to add?
Yeah, that's it.
Kittens, once again, thank you for listening to our cartoon voices ramble through to the week's topics. And we'll be back next week with anything that passes in front of our eyes and in front of our desks. Don't forget to subscribe to this podcast, follow us on social media, and buy our book.
Yeah.
And if you do all that, then we'll love you.
Only then.
Only then. No, actually, we love you for listening.
No,
thank you very much. We'll see y'all next week.